Good morning, or good afternoon, or good day to the people of the collective Republic of Bullshit. Good morning, good day, good afternoon to the rats that live in the walls. Good afternoon, or good day to the construction workers working on a Mayor Jenny Durkin real estate project where there used to be a homeless shelter. Good afternoon to construction workers who are magically, immune from pandemics and shit. Yeah, it's Tuesday. Can you believe it? Tuesday, January the 26th, 2021. It's the new year, and already you can feel a new spring air, can't you? In fact, there's a new story about the former president, the current president, the president to be impeached. You know how we have two popes right now? At one point in the 14th century, they had three popes. We only have two. That's a good sign. Yes, there's a rumor that the president or ex-president or Schrodinger president, Donald J. Trump, is currently in a starship. He's traveling in a space battleship called the Inthruxus. This ship is currently traveling at 60% the speed of light, if you can believe that shit. It utilizes futuristic fusion drives and all sorts of laser light technology that you would have seen at the Seattle Center in the late 80s, late on a Friday night, listening to acid metal and watching the laser light show, you fuck. He's traveling in a spaceship for your freedom. He is traveling in the Inthruxus, launching his probes at Uranus. I mean, he's launching his probes from Uranus. His ship is nearing Uranus, and he's going to launch his probes. So many interesting bullshit narratives developing around the Donald Trump mythology, almost as if the whole thing were a psyop, the whole fucking thing. Now there are people in the Q movement saying, "Wait a minute, Donald Trump is in a bunker. He's in a bunker surrounded by super space soldiers and rangers and whatever. He's in a bunker someplace in Boca Raton." Which makes it a submarine, because any bunker in Florida is really a submarine. Yeah, it's right around 10:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here in Seattle. We're just hanging out and talking about things like wearing two masks. Have you heard the latest advice that was published in the famously important and truthful New York Times? It's time that we put on two masks because if one mask is great, two masks is better, right? Except, that makes no fucking sense. Have you ever in your entire fucking life seen an astronaut with two helmets on? Well, we have an outer helmet, but the inner helmet is for the mungus and the other things that end up on your face if you're not careful. We wear two helmets in NASA because every ending at NASA is a happy ending. And you don't want to get anything on your face during touchdown. yeah, we need to wear two of these masks now. Now, what's really strange is there's still really no science involved in this. You can still make your own mask. You need to make two of them. You need to make them double thick. There's still too much oxygen getting to your brain. If you can figure out that the two mask thing is bullshit, you're still getting way, way, way too much oxygen to your brain. If you're wearing two masks, you would know that two masks is legit. That Madonna wears two masks when she's in bed, being tied down and you know, cornholed in all her holes by 15 different hookers. Indeed, two masks are better than one, as every great scientist knows. You remember Tang, the orange drink that the astronauts invented on the way to the moon?
Oh, Dan, that's not the story. The story is NASA invented Tang.
Fuck you about the story. The story I heard while drinking Coca-Cola and shoving Pop Rocks down my bloody throat back in the 70s. The story I heard is that NASA astronauts on the way to the moon invented Tang. They ran out of water. They only had their containers of urine. All they had were bags of urine. And it was kind of orange colored at that point, you know. And so Neil Armstrong or Cat McGee or Cat Stevens on the way to the moon. Cat Stevens recommended adding some sugar and some spice to that urine. Yeah, you remember Tang? And then another favorite of mine from the 70s, Velveeta. I bring it up a lot because I never really wanted to find out what's in it. And let's just talk about this for a second. The Food and Drug Administration has an allowable amount of rat feces that you can find, rat debris, rat offal. All foods have a percentage that's allowed by the FDA. It's okay to have that percentage. Don't have more, and definitely don't have less. You should always have the recommended daily allowance of rat turds and metal shavings and diesel fuel. On the way to the moon, while the astronauts were drinking their urine and pooping out a greasy, yellowy substance, they found out that if they would quickly freeze their excrement in a bag in the special freezy thing they had in the side of the spaceship that exposed their pooped outer space and insto-froze it using the cold of the vacuum, not while it's pointed towards the sun. That'll cause the poop bag to explode, but away from the sun. So there's no heat, no temperature. They found out that when they got their yellowy poop bag back in after drinking their Tang, that it had the consistency and almost the flavor of a kind of cheese. On the way to the moon, the astronauts invented Velveeta too. Thank you. On the way to the moon, the astronauts invented the Velveeta, but then on the way back, they got hungry again. And from re-ingesting their urine and their turds multiple times like a French bulldog, they discovered new and amazing things like Nally's tamales. Yes, on the way back from the moon, their turd bags contained these things that look like tamales, like Nally's tamales. And you know, I don't know if it was Cat Stevens or Neil Armstrong, or it could have been Elton John who suggested maybe we can take those tamales and eat them after shoving them up our butts so that they're warm and tasty, you know. Of course, the people of Earth watched the trips to the moon by Cat Stevens and Elton John and all the Benny and the Jets, and they observed the eating of the Tang, the drinking of the Tang, the eating of the Velveeta and the tamales, but they were told by commercial land that they could eat Hamburger Helper, and it's just like steak. That's what Alan Greenspan said. You can just eat your Hamburger Helper, Alan Greenspan said. And it's just like the steak you used to buy. We ate our TV dinners as the space pilots flew to the moon. We shoved that crumbie all down our throats. When we were done eating the Salisbury steak 16, covered in mushrooms and all kinds of ugly, strange spices and herbs that you can only find now at the 7-Eleven. After we vomited out the poison food, we would go to the freezer and find ourselves from pulverized chicken strips. They're not really chicken strips, it's pulverized, powderized chicken. We would grab our wild turkey from the cupboard and we would slam the cupboard shut. We would turn off all the lights. We would stare into the night while eating our frozen dinners, our TV dinners, and our pulverized, freeze-dried chicken meat, forma fucking food. Injection molded chicken strips from who the fuck, maybe Tijuana. And now we have acid wash McMuffins. We have McMuffin sandwiches where they don't even toast the bread. They simply expose it to an industrial process. And we have Jack in the Box, or what they call Jack. Would you like to eat something from Jack in the Box? Remember the E. coli emergencies of the 80s and 90s that forced Jack in the Box into some sort of proto model of airport food for everybody? Have you noticed that even though the number of items on their menu seems to be huge, the number of employees is small? That's because everything is final assembly at Jack in a Box. They take the acid-washed bread that looks like it's toasted, but that's really a chemical industrial process. They put that into a steamer. They take out the injection molded egg that's made to look like it was an egg they fried recently, but really it's just some type of mungus. Maybe it was eggs once, maybe it was powdered eggs, maybe it was powdered death. You ever think that they've taken death and powdered it and flavored it and shoved it down your throat? Yep, they did a lot of things on the way to the moon. I've been thinking about writing some fictional stuff again because I had a hard time writing this last year. My writing went to crap. Why? Because I just didn't see the fucking point. And if you're going to say, Dan, that's a shitty attitude, fuck you. I know it's a shitty attitude. I see them spraying up in the sky. And they say it's condensation trails, except for it doesn't look like condensation. It looks like what they taught us in nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare training in the military as what's called dispersal. You see, condensation is where shit comes together. It, you know, condenses. Dispersal is where you get a little stream of that fucking cheese whiz gumpus that they dump in the sky. And then 30 minutes later, you have a quote-unquote cloud. A cloud, quote-unquote. You look in the sky and it's a cloud, right? As the birds fall and die. So I was thinking about writing a fictional book called Everyone I Know is a Racist by Charles Manson. Of course, Charles Manson is dead, so this will be ostensibly written and found and discovered after his death. The other idea is a lost lecture series, a prison lecture series by Charles Manson. So if you're interested in me doing a lost lecture series by Charles Manson, let me know. I've already kind of sketched out the first lecture. The idea is to keep them around, you know, 1,500 words or less, plus or minus, fuck you. But the key thing is, these are the words of Charles Manson, the wisdom of good old Charlie. Think if the Beatles, instead of calling that one song Helter Skelter, what if they called it Taco Tuesday? What if instead of Helter Skelter, it was Taco Tuesday? Everybody loves Taco Tuesday. Everybody wants to have a taco in their mouth. Everybody wants to grab the taco of the world and eat from that taco because that is the loveliness of the flesh. Yeah, imagine some really crooked, ridiculous fucking 1960s psychedelic underground movement. But instead of being all racist and helter-skelter, it was all about Taco Tuesday. And so they wouldn't go around killing people, no. What they would do is make tacos and go to people's mansions in Beverly Hills and take their freshly baked tacos and smear them all over the walls. And yeah, for purposes of scientific study, taco is also a euphemism. You figure it out. You have a brain. You can figure it out, man. Marie Antoinette once said, "Let them eat cake," but why couldn't it be, "Let them have hookers and cocaine"? I mean, here's the thing, guys. If you're thinking about the slow, torturous death of the multi-layer cake of mass, and of course, we don't have enough litter from the mass in the streets already. That's sarcasm. But we need more mass. But what if instead of all this wretched fucking masstopia, racist dog whistle, Pavlovian crapola, fucking monkey herpes bullshit. What if instead of this, or some sort of meager stimulus check, when you compare it to the fucking shit they're giving to their friends, what if they just said, let them eat, let them snort coke, let them have hookers? I know, but Dan, coke's expensive. Well, cocaine is expensive because of the current situation, but is it that expensive? It seems to me that given that the CIA runs the whole coke heroin trade, the feds should be able to send us some real stimulus. Send us the cash for the hookers, and the CIA can deliver the cocaine. In fact, the CIA will probably get us crack if we want it. And who knows, it could be the purest coke you've ever had. And if you've never had coke like me, so many of you are familiar with the story of L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology. And I've mentioned this in the past while talking to my friends about this, like my friend Mike, or my friend Jim, or my friend Raylene, or my friend Justin, or all my friends, like AJ from Florida, all the freaks, all the cool people, all the fuckers who want to communicate with the Large Hadron Collider that is the Little Saigon Report. I have mentioned in the past about the Scientology story, believing it was some type of a, well, frankly, an MKUltra project, maybe one of the first. Now, think about L. Ron Hubbard. Among the people that probably knew him, to include the U.S. government, he was a fucking freak in the 1930s. He was a freak when he was writing science fiction. And, you know, I don't know if he was a good science fiction writer or not, but he wrote a shitload. I mean, I've heard before that he is one of the most prolific science fiction writers of all time. And so there's every possibility that some motherfucker in what was called the War Department, keep in mind, prior to World War II, many of the things that we had were not ironically named. The War Department was about war. They never called it the Department of Defense because that's what passive-aggressive piece-of-shit commies do. They drop bombs on you, they set your fucking homes on fire, and then they call it defense because it sounds better. But you remember when the U.S. government had more institutions that were not ironically named? That institution must have looked at the information about L. Ron Hubbard. So how the fuck did he ever get the command of anything, let alone a minesweeper?
Well, Dan, it was just a minesweeper.
Yeah, you know what? A minesweeper is a large, not the largest, but it is a naval vessel. It has many sailors on it. How did that freak, that obviously incompetent, crazy motherfucker, ever get the command? I could see him being the lieutenant in charge of, like, going out and getting the mines. Yeah, go swim for the mines, Ron. Yeah, go swim for the mines. Yeah, bring a magnet. But, and that makes more sense. Like, L. Ron Hubbard was a crazy, like, multiple psychological and physical issues piece of shit. So how the fuck did he get the command of anything? If he had had the command of the latrines, I would have been fucking surprised. Yes, the military is incompetent, but it's not that incompetent. There is a line, okay? Yes, they'll allow pieces of shit to have commands, but not no-name pieces of shit. Usually they're the sons and daughters of senators, congressmen. Sometimes their first name is Hunter. Sometimes their last name is Biden, and they're total pieces of shit. but they're given some type of ostensive authority to build a narrative about how they're some naval hero. L. Ron Hubbard was known as a science fiction writer. Alright? There are many jobs you would have given a fucker like that in the military back in the 40s during World War II. Propaganda was a big thing back then, believe it or not. Okay? There were great Hollywood directors and writers that were producing propaganda series like the Why We Fight series, Frank Capra. Frank Capra, the guy famous for It's a Wonderful Life, was creating all kinds of great propaganda films about the evil Japanese and the evil Germans. There were plenty of jobs for someone whose creative writing skills would allow him to create an entire religion from scratch. But commander of any type of naval vessel makes no fucking sense. In fact, the only way it makes sense is if he was being sheep-dipped, which is to say that he was being pulled into some sort of a secret organization. He was going to be given a cover story. His cover story would be the guy who commanded a fucking naval ship and fired his cannons at Mexico and did all kinds of crazy stupid shit and then was finally, you know, I guess relieved of command, I guess, after doing a dozen or more, you know, crazy stupid things with a naval vessel. That story fits with Crazy Weirdo. That story makes him a crazy weirdo, but also a crazy weirdo that was given the command of a naval vessel. So there's already a kind of mythology that some fucking crazy-ass creative writing fuck could take and spin into something. Oh, look at me. How could I have been that bad, people? How could I have been that terrible? The U.S. Army, or excuse me, the U.S. government, the Navy, would have never let me have a minesweeper. I'm simply mentioning this because I just get so sick of the Scientology crap. It seems like Scientology is just a more honest version of what we have in America today. Like, if you escape Scientology, all you do is escape from that hellhole into the greater Scientology, which is all of the bullshit in our system. All the lies, all the manipulation, all the wearing double masks because two is better than one, right? Two masks are better than one. L. Ron Hubbard, the commander of any naval vessel in World War II. It makes zero sense unless you see it from the perspective of motherfuckers who intended to completely take over, destroy, consume, ingest what was left of a free country. If you think of it that way, then it all kind of makes sense. It makes sense that he got set up. It makes sense that in 1993, when the United States government obliterated people at Waco, Texas, in that same fucking year, they gave Scientology tax-exempt status. Ask me one of the reasons why I don't give a fuck about tax-exempt status, even though I would love to start a church. Ask me why. I'll tell you. Because it's bullshit. It's a political tool. Tax-exempt status means you will do and say exactly what the government wants you to say, whether it's from the pulpit or whether it's just trying to help homeless people. So no, if you're ever asking yourself, Dan, you have donations, why don't you have a 501c? You know why? 501, fuck you. That's why. At this point, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Yes, indeed. If I had a porn star name, my name would be Johnny Come Lately. You can spell that yourself, can't you? If I had a porn star name, my name would be Johnny Come Lately, or that would be my goal, probably.
And you're saying, Dan, why would you talk about porn star names?
Jesus doesn't like that. Well, I get it. I don't think Jesus likes a lot of the stuff I say. And yet, if I didn't say those things, I would still say them in my head. And since Jesus can see my thoughts, I would just assume speak them out loud. Oh, Dan, that's crazy, because if you say every bleeding thing that's in your head, yeah, I know. I don't really. I mean, If you ever listen to this podcast and you ask the question, is Dan really, really, really telling it all? Well, I tell a lot. And then I do tell you guys a lot of stuff that's pretty gross. And you might think, how the fuck does this person stay alive? Well, that's a good question. How do I stay alive? If I call you a racist and you tell me why do you think I'm racist, that means you're racist. If you admit to being racist, that also means you're definitely a racist. If you are asking about sexism, when clearly the topic right now is the racism of the whitey white race of racists that are currently destroying all non-white peoples, if you bring up sexism or homophobia, when clearly the subject is racism, then you're also a racist. If you're worried about the Federal Reserve, if you ask questions about the Fed, if you question central banking, you are a huge racist. Isn't it interesting how expansive the racism is? In fact, the only way to not be racist is not to question the racism or the racialism or the massive transcendental racism or transcendental racialism defined by Black Lives Matter, because Black lives do matter. And remember, eat healthy food, don't breathe poisonous air, and yes, Black Lives Matter. That goes into the same bucket. Don't eat poison. Black Lives Matter. In fact, at this point in human history, it is merely a question of how anti-racist you can be. How anti-racist can you be? And the only way to prove yourself to be anti-racist is to identify racists. If you go around Seattle and you scream out with a dread finger, shaking from the DTs, shaking from the craziness and the poisons in your body, if you walk down 12th Avenue and you see somebody walking with their girlfriend, you can simply point out to them, you are a fucking racist. Fuck you. Thank you. I remember when I was the general of the 5th Racialist Army of Seattle Black Awareness Group X. I remember when you were the queen of racialism and I was your mungus whore. I would clean the thrunk film from your anus. I would mungulate with oils in the vats of Blinkton. And what of the racialist wars of 2020? The Battle of Thrumpton Street, where the Gronkus lords and the Cumbiacs and the various glum fought to the death with lead pipe and bicycle chain and broken glass, and there was sadness in their eyes. There was a sadness in their eyes after the Battle of Thrumpton Street. There were people screaming to the sky. There were people screaming as if the Lord would not hear them, because they were going to die. The Battle of Thrumpton Street, where the anal thrax butt queen of Tarragon laid waste to the Church of the Pierced Nipple. And you said you were the Gubic King, and I said I would slay you with my sword of control, and you said I'll strangle you in your sleep, and I said I'll toss acid in your eyes. And what about the negative racialists? Negative racism is when you're so fucking good at finding racists. You're not even net zero, which would be the definition of not being a racist. Nope. The negative racialists are technically in the negative, so they can once a week go around and say terrible things to people. They can use racial slurs until they get back to zero. If they go past zero, they become racist again, which means they have to find racists. Yes, negative racism. All this is wonderful. Don't be racist, right? But if you're really, really racist, if you feel bad about your fucking racism, if you're so fucking racist that you wake up every racist day and think a racist thought, then there is only one solution to solving your fucking problems with racism. In the notes of this podcast, there are two links, a link to Venmo and a link to PayPal. And you feel free to donate as much money as you want to me to fight racism. In fact, it might be the only way for you to fight racism. Give me all your money, all your cash, all your gold. Oh, fuck it. Give me your Bitcoin, too. I'll do an arbitrage there. Give me everything, and then you can wake up in your poverty, in your smeltas hole, covered in fecal matter, and at least you can scream to the world, I am not racist. But that only happens if you donate to the Little Saigon Report. I call these indulgences because they allow you to indulge in racism. The more money you give me, I'll send you a PDF that gives you an indulgence. It means you can go out and say nasty shit up to a point. I'll define the phrases you can use and the number of times. Thank you.
Cottage cheese.
Some motherfucker emailed me or contacted me or used his mind beams to talk about cottage cheese. This fucker wanted to know what I put in my cottage cheese. And I told him, why don't you ask Gwyneth Paltrow? What do I put in my cottage cheese, Gwyneth? What do I put beneath my polluted heart? What crombus do I pull from beneath my polluted heart to add to your precious cheese? I can see between the molecules of desire and your own faint attempt at being a monkey king lays bare your intentions. Cottage cheese man. What do you put in your chili? What kind of stone do you shove up your butt prior to placing some kind of cucumber in your, you know, woman's whatchamacallit? Tell me, Sclinctus. I'm not CIA. What kind of car do you drive? Is it electric? Does it come with a vibrator? What do you put in your cottage cheese? I won't tarry near the edge of the Brimsonian Sea, where scare turtles and whale snakes feed on the carcasses of things that once lived before Fukushima. We would go down to the wading pools and clean out the dead things, the mungus. We would form it into a stew and we'd boil it before the sun went down. By the fire, we would hear the screams of the animals in the Pacific as they die. The screams of whales as they watch their children stillborn. We would watch them scream as they looked at the tumorous fucking salmon and said to themselves, "Is there nothing to eat?" And this is all because of your fucking cottage cheese bullshit, is all I'm gonna tell you. Next subject, right? More about racism. There was a dude today near Spruce and 12th. He was really racist. He had racist eyes. He was wearing racist clothing. He had a racist walk. And he had one of these really fancy fucking masks. You know, the wash and wear. So much better for the environment. Kills you that much faster if you wear two. But he looked racist to me. I saw some people pick up pizza today. I saw them pick up the pizza. I saw some people pick up pizza today, but they didn't give me any. And I think that's really racist. If they'd given me a piece of pizza, I might have thought they were less racist. Gribby? Gribby, my friend from the Schlim Talks, the guy that used to live in South Park, not far from the river, he came in handy many times. Gribby, my old friend from the gangs, my old buddy, he can tell if you're racist by looking at your shoes. If you're wearing, like, those Doc Marten bullshit, you're probably racist. If your shoes cost more than 100 bucks, you're probably racist. If you give Gribby 50 bucks when he calls you racist, he'll say maybe you're not racist. You see how that works? Gribby will beat you to death. He'll say, those shoes look racist. Give me 50 bucks. I was having chicken soup the other day, eating some chicken soup, and I looked at the chicken, but it looked weird and discolored. It had a flimsy kind of membrane to it. The connective tissue was kind of slimy, and it had a hint of something, like a hint of sulfur to it, sulfur and salt water and pain and death. And so the demon that lives in my wall told me, you know that this is ocean chicken, Dan. I said, Zinder, what do you mean? He said, it's ocean chicken. It's a phrase they use now for these things that are living in the basin of the Gulf of Alaska, deep below the surface, hundreds and hundreds of feet below the surface, living off the dying dead things at the bottom. They used to be Alaskan king crab, but their fucking exoskeleton fell off. Now they look almost like a biped as they slowly walk across the ocean floor. Their various tendrils of mucous membrane and dying flesh will stretch out and attack and skewer animals, the things that are still left alive at the bottom of the Gulf of Alaska, you know. They dredge this place now for ocean chickens. If you're eating chicken soup, there's a good chance that you're living off of something that lives off the dying crabs and the tumor fish and the coog beasts and the pain and plutonium. I'm running out of things I can believe. And when I say things I can believe, I mean these terrible fantasies I generate in my head in order to escape this, you know, reality. It is disassociation. I'm not proud of it. But it's one of the ways I deal with this, you know, this thing we're going through, whatever it is, that some people think it's the Great Reset. If you ask me, the Great Reset is just another mindfuck. Just another mindfuck for middle-level functionaries governors, generals, mayors of cities, so they can believe that there's a seat for them at the table. But there isn't. There's no room at the inn for you. Whatever bunker or safe zone they're living in, whatever yurt zone, yurt assembly, wherever they are in New Zealand or Antarctica or deep below the surface of your fucking city, you don't get a seat there. There's no space for you. The reason why the reset mythology exists is so that you motherfuckers, you governors who've been nothing but douchebags for a year, you can believe there's an exit strategy, but there isn't one. It's true, a lot of people are going to be killed, but you guys are going to actually be torn apart. That's what the reset is for. It's so that you can have a fantasy in your head, okay? I might have my own dead-end fantasies, but I can tell you something, the reset, that is a super mega gigantic dead-end fantasy. I read this week that there is a vaccine shortage. Now, of course, I was reminded of the coin shortages, the toilet paper shortage. You know, all the important shortages. Don't buy too much food, though. Food's fine. Remember, in all these shortages, the one thing they don't talk about too much is food. Even though food banks across the country are running thin, even though there are food riots around the world, although you won't generally see it in the news, unless the purpose is just to fuck with you, unless the purpose is just to enrage you, to make you scared. Here, and let's get this one out of the way too. If you don't know by now that the entire news apparatus is owned, you are fucking clueless. So if you read about something in the news, I don't care if it's protests in the Netherlands. I don't care if it's some dude that runs a gym in New Jersey that refuses to lock down. It doesn't matter. It's the same bullshit. Totally the same. So the government says they're running out of vaccines. You'll read about these various places. We don't have enough vaccines. That's bullshit. It's bullshit. I don't really know the purpose of why they say that, because I would say ostensibly it's because they want you to believe there's a shortage, so you'll fucking go to your fucking health clinic and get the vaccine. I think that's why. But who knows? It's like, why do they allow all of these vaccine injury stories to be told? They can control it, believe me. They can control it. They can convince you that World Trade Center 7 fell because plastic chairs are burning in the lower floors. They can make you believe a lot of stupid nonsense. So if they simply wanted to, they wouldn't tell a story about the vaccine injuries. So why are we reading every other day about people being killed by the vaccine? I would contend it's because it's a mindfuck. I would contend because the same trauma-based mind control that started almost a year ago is ongoing. The election changed nothing. Coin shortages, toilet paper shortages, the race war bullshit, fucking vaccine shortage, vaccine injuries. All of these things, to include the fucked up election, are not designed for any other purpose but to piss you off, but to drive you crazy. Oh, wear two masks, and then there'll be a mask shortage. Well, you can make your own mask out of used toilet paper. Fucking shortages. Anywho, I think I've gone through the principal topics I needed to cover for this iteration of the Little Saigon Report. Before I go, I would just point something out. I don't often do this, but I'm going to do it because, well, what the hell? Number one, if you've already donated to my podcast, and I don't care if it was a little or a lot, and some of you have donated too much. I mean, I shouldn't say that because, hey, hobo here. Hobo needs food. Hobo needs beer. But some of you have donated a little, some of you donated a lot to either the podcast or to the virtual church of Little Saigon. And yes, I'm still doing services. I'm just waiting for more inspiration than to do them on a schedule. Maybe that's wrong. You know, say, Dan, you haven't had a service in a week. Well, I haven't. I haven't really felt the Holy Spirit to do a service in a week. I'm sorry about that. Some of you have already donated. So if you've donated a little or a lot, or if you've donated, in one case, I have a really awesome listener who donated food to me this last year. Healthy food that he had, you know, apples that grew on his property. This was huge. This was huge. This was at a point where I was in a really bad place psychologically and physically. So having some fresh fruit, believe it or not, was gigantic. So what I'm about to say does not apply to people who've already donated. I won't turn away your money, okay? But frankly, some of you have been way too fucking generous, okay? Ideally, if this was going to be a going concern, if I could even remotely conceive of a life whereby I could fund my existence on $1,700 a month, and that's not a lot. I figure for $1,700 a month, maybe $2,000, I could get caught up with my rent, I could buy food, I could survive. That's probably not going to happen. There's a lot of things that are probably not going to happen. You don't want to hear it, so I'll just say it. So if you've already done a donation, please kind of ignore this. But for those of you who are listening, and if you're asking, well, how can I help? If you can help, if you have the money, let me cover the basics. If you need to take care of your food, your water, your shelter, do not donate. If you have people in your life who need help financially, don't donate to me, help them, okay? This is one of those situations for the human race right now where if you have a conscience, you have to use your common sense and your heart. But if you are lucky enough, according to the mythology of the crypto world, if I'm to believe that bullshit, if you're a real estate king, and you're filled with billions of blimpdoc dollars, and you have extra money after you've taken care of the things you need to take care of, your family, the people you care about, and you still have cash left over, and you're asking yourself, Dan, how can I help? Well, it's really not that complicated. If you donate to me, either through Venmo or PayPal, you'll be helping. You'll be helping me get food. You'll be helping me get some beer, because I'm not going to lie about that. And yeah, some weed. You'll be helping me pay some rent if I can. And I'd love to get caught up on the rent, because currently they're going through the cycle of, well, we got to do a check every month, and it stresses me out. It stresses me out because I know it sounds stupid. At some point, it's going to be something that I can't do or I'm not ready to do. At some point, people will be forced to desperation. At some point, there will be evictions. There might be an eviction ban right now, but at some point in the near future, there are going to be evictions if, and this is important, if the intention is ever of getting to something that we would call functional. I'm of the opinion that that's never going to happen. I'm of the opinion that the reason why we've had one trauma monkey after another is because they want to destroy us. And they are destroying us psychologically. They are destroying us physically. They are killing lots of people. The monkey herpes really isn't doing anything. But their activities, their lies, their bullshit, their fear-mongering, that's killing a lot of people. And then there's just outright murder. In the case of, you know, Governor Cuomo, for example, or probably Governor Inslee as well. And if they want to sue me, I mean, as if such a thing means anything at this point, feel fucking free. Sue the hobo in Little Saigon. Free speech is dead. Rule of law is dead. The only thing they can take from me at this point is my wretched life. That's it. So if you are so well off right now and doing really well, if you have extra money and you want to donate to something, and you've already donated to the whales and the various organizations that people tell you should donate to, you can donate to the Little Saigon Report. You can click on that Venmo or that PayPal link that will be in the notes of this podcast. And you can give me millions if you want to. If you know Doug Casey, you can send this podcast to him and see what he thinks. Maybe out of sadness and pity, he'll give me $1 million. Maybe if you email this to like that Thiel guy, Peter Thiel, or maybe Bezos, he'll give me $1 billion, maybe. Maybe if you send this link to somebody who's the lesbian overlord of the third collective of the witch tribes of central Mexico, maybe I'll get doubloons, gold doubloons, and silver ingots, and diamonds, and love. Maybe if we travel together through the spaces between the here and the now, maybe if we build a time machine out of asparagus, maybe if we're able to finally construct a super starship and travel through space, we can meet Donald Trump near Uranus. Yes, he's currently near Uranus, traveling at 60% the speed of light. He's going to launch probes at Uranus, and when it's done, everything will be better. You'll feel better. But none of this can happen. None of this can happen if you don't donate. And what's really critical is that if you donate right now to the Little Saigon Report, if you donate right now, if you donate at this very moment, we're running a special on not being racist. If you donate right now, we're running a special on not being racist. If you're able to donate $10,000 or more, you'll get a signed PDF from Dr. Freckles, declaring that according to Dr. Freckles' Global Tontine Club, which is the most powerful government on planet Earth right now, and the most just social contract, yes, according to Dr. Freckles' Global Tontine Club, you'll be certified not racist for 1 year. And if you say, well, Dan, if I give you 10 grand and it only covers my being a racist for 1 year, do I have to do that every year? It is the year 2021. If you are so fucking optimistic that you think you have to worry about paying me 10 grand a year to prove you're not racist, that's optimism, buddy. Hold on to that. Have a great day.